Please help me welcome Carol B. from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, everybody. I am Carol B., compulsive debtor from Portland, Oregon. This is so exciting. Thank you for inviting me. That was definitely an unexpected pleasure and privilege. I've learned that when the service finger points my way, I should always say yes. And that's been my my MO. Just, I'd rather look at you guys than me. So there you go. So also want to thank the New York City Host Committee for organizing this and sponsoring this. And thank you so much for all the hard work that everybody has been doing. And I know you're very anxious to get on to the talent show. And the most important part of the day is, of course, the dance. So I don't want to keep you too long, but I'll do my best to fill in the next 45 minutes as best I can. You might notice this little, I hope it's facing the right direction. This is my visual aid to help me stay on track. Thank you. So I'm going to talk about these three areas, steps, sponsorship, and service, and sort of weave my story into these three things. But first I will say, I've been solvent in DA since January of 1995. That was when I went to my first DA meeting. I actually had cut up my credit cards before I got to that DA meeting. And, you know, that seems like a long time maybe to some, but not as long as some others. And I'm just a debtor, just another bozo on the bus. So I don't take my solvency for granted. I know that at any time I could lose it. So I work this program because my life depends upon it. So 1995, I came waltzing into my first DA meeting in Santa Monica, I think, California. And I was one of those debtors looking for a new perspective on money. And I figured I'd get out of debt in a couple years and I'd be on my way. And I didn't want to hang out with all you losers. I thought the whole thing was stupid, and I thought God was stupid, and I just wanted to get out of debt and move on. And I thought that I would be able to do that. So I kind of hung out in the periphery of the group, and it was a big meeting, so you can hide down there in those big meetings. You can just sort of lurk around the corner in the room, and people won't say anything to you. Unless you start coming back. And after a while, you keep coming back and people start to notice you. And that's when recovery started to take hold in me. I found out that through the course of the years that I was a very angry person. And I did not know that when I first walked into DA. And I had to work the steps multiple times to figure out that underneath all that anger was a whole lot of grief and sadness and loss. And it's been a process. So what I've learned, before I get to my first topic, what I've learned is that for me, the debting disease has two parts, and both parts are trying to kill me. And I think they're embedded somewhere right in here. So this part says, I deserve to have whatever I want right now without working for it or earning it or paying for it, that I am so unique and special that I deserve to have what I want right now. And by extension, that means that all of you guys are somehow responsible for providing that for me. That's one part of my brain. That's the compulsive spender part of my brain. Another part of my brain is the part that says, I deserve nothing. I am so horrible that I shouldn't even be allowed to live. That there is not enough love, there's not enough food, there's not enough money, there's not enough success, there's not enough creativity, there's not enough for me. You guys can have it, but not me. That's the other part of my brain that's trying to kill me. And that's the deprivation addict under earner, whatever you want to call it. That's that part of my brain. And I hope you can see, it's certainly become clear to me over the years, I hope you understand that those two parts of my brain are constantly at war with each other. They don't get along. And to me, that equals insanity. And that insanity drives my behavior, has driven my behavior, I believe, since the day I was born. I think that I was born a debtor. And the choices I've made, maybe in the environment I was raised in, have shaped me. But I think that the way I conceive of this thing, it actually is a place in my brain or somewhere, I assume it's my brain, that really is different and makes me see the world through a sense of impoverishment in all that I do and see. And I don't think that will ever go away, which is why I keep coming back. So that's my definition of the debting disease. So I identify when I in a meeting, I identify as a compulsive debtor. When I first came into DA, I tried on all kinds of labels. I was a self-debtor, I was an under-earner, I was a space debtor, I was a time debtor, I was an art debtor, I was any kind of debtor, but I didn't want to be a compulsive debtor because somehow it seemed wrong to attach that label to me, to what I was feeling. I wanted to be special, I wanted to be unique. Now I know that I am just your basic run-of-the-mill compulsive debtor, and I'm fine with that. So that is how I identify. I no longer use fancy labels. The primary purpose of DA is that I don't debt one day at a time. That's my goal. I don't know how higher power makes it happen, but that's my goal. Okay, so what else? I already said that. In case you, this is what I'm, so if a strong wind comes through here right now, I'm gonna lose my place. I'll be completely screwed. Okay. So now I'm gonna talk about the steps as that right there. So hey, this is the primary purpose right there in the center. So all these three things here, they support my commitment to not debt. I have no idea how it works. I just know that it works. So the way I do it is first I do the steps. Okay. So number one, I admit that I'm powerless. It's not something I happily admit, but I really do. On most days I wake up thinking if I just had more money, I wouldn't be a debtor. Does that sound insane? It does to me. Because I've had more money and I was still a whack job. And the money didn't change me. It didn't solve what was wrong with me. I know that this is a fatal and progressive illness, and I want to live, so I keep coming back. So admitting that I'm powerless was the beginning, and stopping debting was the start of my recovery. That's where recovery can begin. Recovery doesn't begin until I stop debting. Okay. So the hardest part for me has been the spiritual part. When I first got to DA, I did not want to hear about God. I did not like God. I didn't know God. I thought God was stupid. I don't like the word God. I still don't like the word God. God, God, God. I have to work at it, but it's one syllable, so I use the word God rather than higher power because higher power takes too long, so. So silly. Anyway, so what was I saying? Oh yeah, I don't like God. So the first prayers I learned, I learned that there are levels of prayer, and this is the way it worked for me. The first level of prayer was F you, God, you lousy, whatever you are, like, and that's where my relationship with the higher power began. I was swearing at God. So I was talking to God. That was the beginning. After that, the prayer was, help me, God. Help me, God. And that went on for a really long time. I have a lot of journals going back to 1995 to show exactly how good I got at asking God for help. So the next level of prayer, if I can remember right, is thank you, God. Thank you, God. And I did eventually get to that level of prayer, for which I am truly grateful. And the somewhere in there, I think there's sort of like a mezzanine of prayer, which would be help them, God. Sort of like, at least, you know, not all about me, but like other people exist. Wow, what a revelation. And then the level of prayer that I really hope that I can maintain is God, how can I help? That's where my recovery takes a leap into the fourth dimension. So those are the levels of prayer. I hope you're taking notes. You can always go back and look at the recording later. So let's see. So step three is the surrender step. And I'm a stubborn debtor, like many of us, and I don't surrender easily. But I'll tell you the story of how I came to surrender. I was driving a school bus, one of my many, many jobs, out in a suburb of this town, at Portland. And, you know, when you're driving a school bus, you take the kids in the morning and then you take them to school and you drop them off, and then you go in the afternoon and you pick them up and take them home. So you have this really long break in the middle of the day. So I didn't live near enough to the bus district to go home for lunch and take a nap, which is what I really wanted to do. So I lived in my car for basically the whole time. So for 9 months, I had this big long window of time in the middle of my day, and I would go up to this nature park and I would walk around in the grass and I would yell at God. And what I yelled basically was, why isn't my vision coming true? Well, I've done everything I'm supposed to do. I'm not debting. I'm writing my money down. I do press relief meetings. I do service. I go to my meetings. I'm doing everything that everybody says to do, and my ship is still somewhere offshore. It's not coming in. What is going on? Over and over and over. I know the people in my meeting were so sick of hearing me whine about how my ship was somewhere offshore. So I had to go through what I had to go through. You know, we get there when we get there. But it was really great to have that time, even though that was 2001. It was a really bad year for everybody. But that's the year I surrendered. Out there in the middle of that tall grass, yelling at the top of my lungs, like, what the F, God? And then I finally realized the difference between a request and a demand, I guess, is was really obvious. And I finally, I surrendered. And I still had some more stuff to do, you know, other part-time jobs and stuff. But it's the weirdest thing that after that, I started doing service in Portland as a GSR. I got recruited to the General Service Board. I got a job and an apartment on the exact same day. Like, how could that have happened? It was like the sun came out. It was the weirdest, that is what made me a believer in step three, the power of surrender, the key of willingness. It became very clear. Okay, so step four and step five, there's nothing I like better than analyzing myself. There's nothing more interesting in the world than me, but I would like to suggest that self-analysis is a tool, not the solution. Step four, step five, tools to help us. Step four is so I can clean house, so I can clear a channel to be of service. That's what it's for. It's not a place to lollygag. It's a deep cleaning. One of the best things I ever heard in LA was trust God, take action, and detach from the outcome. And that's how I see part of step four and step five. So step six and seven, the transformation steps. These are the two steps that made me a believer in the power of steps to transform lives. I don't know how it works. I just know it works. I did a deep dive into my relationship with my father, who I blamed for everything. And I was in such desperate misery and pain that I was really willing to do what my sponsor suggested. And I, you know, I leaped off the cliff of steps 6 and 7. And I had a profound spiritual experience that lasted for about 2.5 days, and then I was back to normal. But it was an amazing lightening of my load. It was like something had been lifted right out of me. And I believe now that God, whatever God is, changed me on a molecular level. I think I was changed and I became a different person. I have never had any pain or psychic pain or suffering, anything like what I went through back then, trying to exorcise the demon of my father from my head. And it worked. And so that's why I share the message of DA recovery with sponsees, because it works. Steps 8 and 9, call them the payback steps. This is where the universe comes back to give me an opportunity to make amends. And right now my mom is in a nursing home. She has dementia, and I'm making a living amends by visiting her every day outside her window, and trying to keep her alive long enough so that I'll get to see her one more time before she dies in person. We'll see what God has in mind for that. But it's a testament to the power of the steps that of the 4 kids in my family, I was the last person mentioned in the will to become executor of the estate. Everybody else had to die before they would let me step in and handle anything. And now I'm the point person. I'm the one managing her money. I manage her health care. I show up and I get things done, and I involve my family in it. I try to be, you know, democratic, and I don't make unilateral decisions, but I'm the one. And this is my living amends to my mother. And I'm truly grateful that I have this opportunity to know her and love her as she is now in the last years, months of her life. I don't know. So what else? Oh, yeah, there's some other steps that come after that, but who cares? I'm out of time on the step part. 9, liberation. 10, staying current. Whatever. The step 12 is, I'm going to overlap with the other topics here. So I'll come back to step 12, because obviously I'll have to if I'm talking about service. But let's talk about sponsorship. Or I'll talk about sponsorship. Later on, you can talk about sponsorship. I am a big believer in sponsorship. Even though I'm not necessarily a people person, I'm pretty good one-on-one. I don't really like crowds of people, but I'm so grateful for what DA has given me. And I truly believe that I need to pass it on if I want to keep it. I think that's an important precept of the program. And so I do. And maybe I do it in a way that's slightly unorthodox. Some of you who know me know that I'm not a sponsor for life, and I just take people through the steps. Once I finish working the steps with you, I will cut you loose, and I will expect you to do the same thing with other people. I will not keep trading recovery back and forth with you, because we need to pass it on to new people. Newcomers are really the most important person in the room. If I really was in my right mind back in the growing up days when I was learning my way through DA, I would have realized, I think, that being a sponsor is as important, it probably more important than having a sponsor. Once I've gone through the steps, the only way to keep it is to pass it on. And so being a sponsor is critical. So I if I had known sooner, whenever a newcomer came in, I would have gone right up to them and said, hey, I'd be happy to work the steps with you. because that's how I stay solvent. I don't know what will happen with the newcomer. That's not my problem. But, I pass it on to keep it. And I want to stay solvent. So this is, you work with another debtor to maintain your solvency. So that's how I work the steps. So if you ask me to work the steps, you can, we'll be saying goodbye after step 12. Just to let you know. So some people really love the tools. And I have some ambivalence about the tools. Well, no, wait, I take that back. I have the ambivalence about one tool, and that is press relief meetings. I've had a few and given many, and over the years, I've come to see that there's a pattern in many press relief meetings, and that is when you ask them, a debtor, what pressure they're having, it almost always is a money pressure. They never say, I can't find God. That's never on the agenda. It's always, I can't pay my rent, or I need a new job, or I can't stop debting, or whatever. But it's never like, please help me find a closer spiritual connection to a higher power. That has never happened. So whenever I'm on a press relief meeting, I don't even do them anymore, but if I were to be on a press relief meeting, the most important action item that would ever come out of that meeting would be get a sponsor and work the steps. And so once I realized that, I figured, what is the point of a press relief meeting? Like, why would I go to other debtors for financial advice? Like, that makes no sense at all to me. Like, I'm sure not a financial expert. I'm, of course, happy to tell y'all how to manage your money, but that is definitely not what I should be doing. My job is to share my experience, strength, and hope with you, the newcomer, so that you can find your own path to not debt. So I just bypass the press relief meeting and go straight to the steps. That's me. I know some people live and die by press relief meetings, and I respect that. But that's just me. So be a sponsor. How am I doing on time? Okay. So I already said the most important person is the newcomer. Yes, I think that's true. As a sponsor, well, I have I recommend co-sponsoring if you're not able to find a sponsor. I hope that people will realize the importance of being a sponsor and maybe be more willing to help newcomers when they're asking for a sponsor. But if newcomers can't find a sponsor, I would recommend getting with another person who has equal willingness and just working the steps together. It's important to have a witness. We're just channels for recovery. We're not the source of recovery. We're just a channel. So a higher power can move through us to help the other person get to wherever they need to go. And it's not our job as sponsors to decide what that journey looks like or how it should resolve or whatever. We're just the channel. So, I had a thought go through my head, and now, boy, I hate it when that happens. Well, anyway. So another thing that I sort of get wrapped around the axle on, besides press relief meetings, is the whole idea of visions, because I have ambivalence about visions. It's a very seductive thing, and it's what really got me into DA, and it kept me there for quite a while. So I can't say that it didn't have an influence on me. But I will say that there was a long period of my life where I put the vision in the center of my life. And that was part of my step three story, where I really was very disappointed and angry and upset and unhappy and disillusioned that my vision did not come true the way I thought it should come true. And in that sense, I felt DA had let me down. I've all those visions meetings where people were talking about all, their fabulous houses and their wonderful vacations and their groovy relationships and all of that stuff. Like I think now that I don't know what could be, should be done about this, but I know that putting visions in the center of my life has not worked. The only thing that has ever gotten me closer to my vision is putting the higher power in the center of my life. Now, I don't know if there is a God or what it is. If it exists, I have no idea. And I don't believe that I will ever truly know that the nature, the whatever of God. I just call it God because that's easy to say. But I don't have a natural inclination in believing in God, whatever God is. I have to work at it. Every day I write my prayer. Hi, God, it's me. Are you there? I think you're there. This is what I plan to do today. What's your will? It's really, I write it out, actually. What do you want me to do and be today? That's what the prayer is. And then I say, okay, here's the stuff on my list, God. This is what I think I'm going to do today. But if you have another idea, I would like you to bless it or block it. Turn me in the direction that's most useful. That's my prayer. Then I just get busy and do stuff and God figures out what happens. I have no idea how it works. Every day I dig down into the well of faith, you know. It's like every day it fills up with sludge and I wake up and I dig it out again. Like, it's not an easy thing. I've made a habit of it. It doesn't come naturally to me to believe in a higher power, but I know that it makes my life better. And so I do it because it makes life better. So a vision for me, it's not what it used to be. The true vision is the deep desire to live usefully and walk humbly under the grace of God. That to me is a true vision. DA doesn't promise me wealth. DA does not promise me I'll ever get out of debt. DA does not promise me, you know, piles of money coming down on my head, which is of course the only thing I ever wanted. DA doesn't promise us any of that stuff. What we get when we work the 12 steps is a spiritual awakening. I'm sorry to tell you, but if you want something else other than that, you're looking in the wrong place. Because this is, the thing is about that spiritual awakening, like, it just creates this level of comfort and contentment and security and safety that money has never really given me. I mean, I've had money, I've had less money. I don't have a lot of money now. My life is very small, but it's actually a very contented and creative life, which is truly, I think, it's a miracle. Oh my God. Okay, so look at me, I'm right on time. It's time now to talk about service, which is what you guys are all doing as GSRs, which I honor you so much, and you wonderful trustees for service. This is really where my recovery took off. I think it was 1990, I want to say 97. The conference was in LA and I was on the host committee, and then I moved to Portland, but I flew back just to be the secretary for the convocation. And this is before we had a professional parliamentarian. So I saw people like almost coming to fisticuffs in a hotel banquet room, right? All these fancy tables with the little tablecloths and everything. And there's all these debtors like ready to pound the crap out of each other because they were so passionate about what they thought we should be doing. And here's me up there, you know, writing. This is before a laptop. So I'm scribbling away trying to capture, like, so-and-so said this and so-and-so said that. And that was really... You know, one of the best things I ever heard was from somebody who was on that host committee who looked at me one day and he said, "Carol, service is the pit that sucks you dry." That's been true. But service is also okay. Service is the path to a recovery that you won't even believe until you're on that path of service. So whenever the finger of service points my way, as I said, I always say yes, even when I shouldn't say no. I've never taken a service moratorium in my entire life, and I never would, because service is what has connected me to a fellowship of people who understand me, who won't kick me out, people who love me for the way I am, you know, in that special way. You get me like nobody in my family ever gets me. So I'm so grateful that I have a chance to give it back through service. I was a GSR in Portland, just right after I had moved from LA to Portland. And I was really I had a strong intention to tell people in Portland how they do things in California. Like in California, in a group, this is how they do this and that. And in Portland, people, they kind of rolled their eyes, and then they elected me their GSR. So I went to conferences at GSR for 3 years, and then they recruited me to the General Service Board. So I served as a trustee from 2002 to 2008. And if you know the service pyramid, right? You know, the groups are at the top and the board is at the bottom. I went all the way to the bottom. And now I'm all back at the top again. It's great. So I learned so much by doing service at these conferences. There is nothing to me more exciting than a room full of debtors. Maybe a Zoom full of debtors now is equally exciting, eh? But a room full of debtors, where we're channeling the higher power through the group conscience, it is a truly spiritual experience. It's like nothing I ever I could imagine in any world ever. It was the best. It was like being at a game and watching the ripple of the wave pass through the room from one side to the other as people shared ideas, and we voted, and we're all raising our little pink flags in the air, and then some brave soul would get up, the minority voice, and say, but wait, what about this? And everybody would look at each other like, oh my God. I remember that happened when we were writing the notes to newcomers, and I was a brand new GSR, and somebody got up and said, but wait, we don't even mention not debting in the notes to newcomers. And everybody looked, our eyes got really big, and we looked aghast at each other. It's like, oh my God, we forgot the primary purpose in the notes to newcomers. Like, how? That's the debtor brain. But being in that group conscience is truly an amazing experience. And I got to see some really great places. The towels at the Maritime, whatever that place was, the Maritime, what was it? In Baltimore. Man, I'll never forget how great those towels were. And then being in a room of a bunch of, you know, we were at a retreat center up in Cape Cod. I think that was 99. My first year was so cold. I saw a skunk. And there was a bunch of, there were some other people at the retreat center, and they were all in silent meditation. And the debtors were all like running around like crazy people, right? Fighting over this tiny little copy machine that hardly ever worked. And all these silent meditators were walking really slowly. It was really great. What a miracle. So I've seen some great places, Baltimore, Sacramento, like places that you just wouldn't believe. So, okay, so we're coming up on the time. So all of this service stuff is really great, and the spiritual awakening is really great. And I just want to remind myself, having a spiritual awakening, you know, I always thought that was sort of the booby prize. And then I think, like, you know, well, what's the point of having a spiritual awakening? Is it just so I can feel better? Of course, that's all I ever cared about, was I just wanted relief from my pain, my self-centered psychic pain. But what I think I know now is that the point of the spiritual awakening, working the steps and all of that stuff, is so that I can clean out the wreckage and the baggage and the detritus that's blocking higher power from using me to do some good in the world. I don't know exactly what that could or should or will look like, but my job is to show up for whatever higher power has in mind. I don't plan that. I pray that God can use me to bring more love and kindness into the world. That's the prayer when I walk out the door every day. It's like, please don't let me run over anybody with my car. Please help me be loving and kind. Even, you know, in the midst of crazy times, the one small thing that I can do is be loving and kind. And I don't always want to, and I don't always succeed, but that's what I see as the point. The point of all of this recovery stuff is not just so I can be happy. It's so I can be useful. And higher power decides what that looks like. But my job is to contribute. And I think about that a lot. Like, I don't chase the money. I try to always show up for the contribution that I'm able to make. I don't always, you know, I don't have like a really clear, it's kind of amorphous sometimes, but sometimes it's very clear. And my life feels like it's getting closer to the kind of life that I really dreamed of when I had the vision. It's a more creative life, even though it's a smaller life. It's a more contented life. It's certainly not what I expected it was going to be. But it's a good life. I would say DA has given me a life worth living. When I first got to DA, I was numb. I didn't know what I was feeling. I was really a walking dead person. I mean, I was literally like a bystander. I didn't have a sense of self. I had only a sense of self, I guess you could say, really. I didn't have a sense of perspective. I only had a sense of self, which is why the word self is so problematic for me personally. You know, self-care turns into self-obsession, just like that for me. It's just a heartbeat. There's hardly a split second between them. So if I could imagine that God has a prayer, it's that I stop thinking about myself and focus more on what I can bring, what I can give, instead of what I have to get. So all of this service stuff, I think, has given me so many skills. I tell you, there's nothing like serving on the General Service Board to really help you understand what you're made of. And it's if you knew me when I first got to DA, you would be shocked right now, because I was mute. I was literally mute. I could hardly talk. I was so consumed with self that I really had no ability to carry a message of any kind. And now I really see, I'm nervous. I don't like talking in front of large groups, whatever, but I know the message that I'm carrying and I believe in the message that I'm carrying. The DA has a primary purpose, and that is to not debt one day at a time. Everything else is a suggestion. I don't know how God makes it happen. Somehow it just happens. I don't know how that works, but I know that I show up with a commitment to not debt one day at a time, and God does all the heavy lifting for me. So just to wrap up, you probably wonder, people always want to know like details and stuff. I can't say really all the details, but I will say that I did get out of debt, in case you're wondering. It was never a huge amount of debt, but you know, newcomers like to know that, you know, good stuff does happen. It's not just blah, 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 God, God, God. I got out of debt. I got the DA miracle job I had for 10 years, got me out of debt, put me through graduate school, one class at a time, paid cash. I'm a super well-educated debtor now with no debt. for whatever that's worth, it is possible to live a life, a solvent life, and have a happy life. It is possible. And so don't, what do they say? Don't quit before the miracle. So willingness, honesty, humility. I think those are the happy byproducts of working step 12, carrying the message. And finally, or second to finally, fellowship. I know a lot of people come to DA because they love to be around people, and I'm not one of them. I didn't come to DA to make friends. Some of you know that about me. I'm not a really social person. I love you all in that special way, but I really don't want you anywhere near me. I like this Zoom thing. It's awesome that you're over there and I'm here. And yet I will say that I have found a fellowship of people who understand me and love me for who I am. And some of those sponsees have become friends for life. And I know that if I go anywhere around the country, there are people who will open up their home to me after COVID, of course. And I will be welcome in many, many places, just as you would all be welcome here. So I invite you to come to Portland someday. And finally, the big gift in all of this for me, the non-believer, has been a connection to a power greater than myself. I don't know what it is, and I don't know where it is, if it's in me, if it's outside of me, if it's masculine, feminine, non-whatever. I don't care. I'm done with all of that debating stuff. I don't care what it is. I believe in something bigger than me that can restore me to sanity, that can keep me from deading one day at a time. And honestly, it doesn't matter what you call it. It just matters that you call it. That's all. That's what I learned. So I think that's just about my time. I think I got 2 minutes left. And I would probably give that up to the talent show and the dance, because I know that's where y'all are getting to right now. I have no idea how you're going to dance on Zoom, but I assume you guys have figured it out. So I'll quit there, and I appreciate the opportunity to share. If anybody would like to contact me, you can email me, bowtiebago@yahoo.com. Bowtie, just like the neckwear. Bago, just like Winnebago. bowtiebago@yahoo.com. So send me an email. Okay.